The Y Curve with Phil Dobby and Roger Hearing.
Councils are going bust.
They're running out of money.
Nottingham, Woking and Birmingham have declared effective bankruptcy, and half of all councils say they'll do the same within the next 5 years.
Anything they're not legally obliged to provide has been slashed. Libraries, the arts, youth services, bin collections.
And even the obligatory stuff, social care, education, highways, has been pared to the bone.
Council tax is going up, but it's not enough, and central government is not prepared to advance any more.
So what's gone wrong with local government, and how can we fix it?
The Y Curve.
So it is in a bit of a state, isn't it? I think, and you know, you and I live in quite a nice part of the country.
Yes.
Where we don't, well, I mean, personally, we don't demand much. I'm thinking, you know, there'll be parts of the country where the people who are dependent on heavily on government services just aren't getting them.
Oh, yeah. And, well, the real dependence, which is, I suppose, say, social services and that kind of stuff, they have to keep that going, but at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And it's a big problem. But, you know, the scale of it is extraordinary. Birmingham, which is the largest local authority in Europe, basically can't pay.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that happen? And
well, it's because I think it's because we'll find out more today. But my sense of it is there's less money being provided by central government, and local government can't raise money in the same way. Because you think about it, a lot of what they're doing to raise money, it's coming from taxes from your home.
Yes.
And people have less money to be able to afford to pay that or to increasingly pay that. We're getting, you know, 5% or more increases in those. And very often, you know, they're going to people who can't afford to pay, being charged for the services that they are consuming. So it's almost becoming a user pays type situation, which is not the idea of, you know, tax. It's supposed to be redistributive. And then the other part is coming from local businesses. Now, that makes no sense because it relates to the space that business takes up. In a digital age, what's that got to do with anything?
Doesn't make any sense.
We're charging retailers more for floor space, whereas online providers are not paying that tax.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like the old system of rates before council tax, which, and of course, in the middle of that, there was the poll tax, the community charge, we should, of course, still call it.
Mm-hmm.
So they really haven't got the idea of local finance sorted out at all. And in a way, never have, because the rates were based on the value of your house, but then they hadn't upgraded that since God knows when, so it made no sense.
Yeah.
You know, there's something badly wrong here. Do we either take the services that we demand and say, well, they have to be paid for centrally because in the end that's the only way government can function? Or do we just give more money and more power to the local authorities, who incidentally are elected by a tiny percentage of the population?
Yes.
Because people don't turn out for local elections.
Yeah, because they really don't. Yeah, because
so the oversight isn't
busy
there either.
Yeah, I know. And should it be actually politics anyway? I mean, if they are just providing local services, shouldn't it be beyond politics? Shouldn't it really just be administration? You know, it's a local administration.
From the centre or local?
Well, I mean, the money should be doled out from the centre, I think, because you can't collect it locally because the wealthy areas will find it easier to gather money. They need it less than the poorer areas in the country are going to struggle to raise that money. So it's got to be coming from central government.
Yeah, but money and power are linked, you see. The trouble is if it comes from centre, it'll be the centre that rules. It won't be
But the danger is otherwise. I'm all for local political decision-making, but I think having it made at the very local level makes little sense.
You're not in parish council.
No, I mean, anyone who's seen the way parish councils operate, how can you be? But you need a plan, but you need a regional plan, don't you? So maybe we need something, you know, more for county councils or sort of like a super county council, you know,
making these unitary authorities. That's all part of the thing. And these elected local mayors, it's all supposed to draw in power, but they can't have power without money, and the money isn't there.
And you've got to have the expertise to go with that power as well. So you look at the Woking Council, for example. Back in your box, Woking Council,
they were developing some very poor investment.
Well, yeah, because they had this crazy idea about the future of Woking as though it was going to be the new, you know, Singapore. I was going to say Singapore on Thames. It's on the River Wey, isn't it? Singapore on Wey.
Yes.
And they built these massive tower blocks, which you can see from miles around, glistening
and
in the occasional days of sunlight. No one lives there. I mean, it's not Singapore, it's China, isn't it? It's like they've made the same property investments that China's been making, and consequently, they're going to be paying for it for a long time.
Well, let's talk to someone who knows all this in some detail and be able to give us a coherent steer, I guess, on what could be done. And that's Professor Peter Murphy. He's Director of Public Policy and Management Research Group at Nottingham Trent University. He joins us now.
So, Peter, you've worked on both sides, haven't you? So you have worked for the civil service, but you're sort of doling out money to these local authorities, and you've been the CEO, the chief executive of one local authority as well. So you've seen it from both sides. So who's the goodie and who's the baddie?
In general terms, it's very difficult to overvalue local authorities. Local authorities basically, every Western advanced democracy has to have local authorities or has local authorities. And they're basically to provide services and to be responsible and accountable to the citizens. And you can't get away with not having local authorities. Basically, if you want to be efficient and effective delivery of local services and make them appropriate to the communities they serve. So local authorities have been, in my view, been fairly amazing that there haven't been more Section 114 notices.
This is the bankruptcy, the technical bankruptcy. Almost.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the notice. But they're increasingly not allowing or catching local authorities before they get to the stage of issuing those 114 notices, because the 114 notices have attracted attention from across the globe. I recently did a talk for the state regulators in the USA, because the bankruptcy of local authorities in America is a state issue rather than a federal issue. And some states allow them to go bankrupt and some states do not. So the 114 notices, particularly those of Nottingham and Birmingham, have attracted worldwide attention.
Yeah, I mean, it has been an extraordinary moment. I mean, obviously, the headlines, what you're talking about, is really what's attracted our attention to this issue. Why, Pete, have things got as bad as they have? Because it does seem that great chunks of local government aren't working. I mean, why has it got to
that
stage?
Is it just simply because they're not getting enough money from central government? Or is the government saying, well, you should be raising more locally and there's just...
Or not spending as much.
Or are they overspending? Are they actually inefficient?
Yeah, and this is basically a story of both long-term fundamental changes in local government finance and the different short-term triggers that have been the straw that broke the camel's back, which have been different in a lot of cases. But fundamentally, you have got a long-term rise in the demand for local authority services coming up against a long-term reduction of local government finance, or the finance that goes in total into local authorities. And over the last 15 years, we have a database that includes every local authority and every service within a local authority. And that shows that every local authority has had a significant decrease in its income from central government, which is just about the biggest part of their income.
So, sorry, just to clarify, they're getting more money from central government than ever before?
No, they're getting less.
They're getting less. So it is, in real terms, it's going down?
Yes, we've deflated it in real terms. It is going down significantly. And in terms of different people calculating that, whether it's the National Audit Office or the Local Government Association or any academics who have the figures, the argument is not whether it's been going down. The amount that it's been going down and the timescale may differ a little, but they're all calculating roughly 30% in real terms over the last 10 to 15 years.
Yes, I've got the Institute for Government. They say they've gone down in real terms by 40% from 2009 to 2020. In today's money, from $46.5 billion to $28 billion. But you're talking about as well the increase in costs. So what's costing more these days?
Okay. Fundamental stuff is that UI and everybody else is aging. And the UK's population is aging, although ironically, we're not getting any healthier. All age, all cause mortality is for the first time in a long time going down. That means there's more of us in the older age brackets, although we are not getting any healthier. So within that, there is increasing inequality in terms of both income or wealth and in terms of health. And that's been going the wrong way since 2010. So the demand for local authority services disproportionately comes from the poorer and more vulnerable members
and the old, and the older. So you're talking about, for example, having to spend more on old folks' homes, perhaps, in that, because that would be a local authority expense. And if you're in a poor area, then you'd be calling on the local authority to provide that. If you're in a wealthy area, then perhaps you'll have enough money sitting in your own nest egg to be able to self-fund that. So
yeah, that's an absolutely great example. The four biggest example, four or five biggest example. Big expenditures are both children's and adults social care, and I should say that for different authorities, each of these has been a factor in tipping them over into a 114 notice. Not all, and not all of them in one local authority, but the big ones are both children's and adults social care.
So they, I mean, that would, they would be examples, though, presumably, of money which is ring fenced. So there'll be some sort of formula sitting somewhere which says a particular local council has so much of an aged population that need help. But then, as we've said, there's a wealth factor. So is that factored into the equation as to how much money is actually received by the council?
In simple terms, the local government finance mechanism used by the Treasury, in other words, how the Treasury works out who gets what, which authorities get how much for what services. Since 2014, has proven unfair to authorities with the poorest population and the greater service needs. And the mechanism has been frozen since 2013-14, such that it continues to get more unfair every year since it was established in the latest establishment in 2013-14, and it will continue to get worse in the future.
So you see, it's not increasing, it's not even staying level in real terms.
No, it's getting worse.
Right.
So it's getting worse.
Right. It's flatlined in absolute terms.
Basically, they changed the formula, and this is an oversimplification, right? Since that time was established, it's generally based on populations and some other things, and then the index of multiple deprivation. And in 2013-14, they reduced the amount that was the weight and the amount that was based on the index of multiple deprivation and increased the straightforward population, the amount that was dependent on population. And that has the effect of benefiting more affluent areas and disbenefiting more impoverished areas or the poorer parts.
And this formula is in relation to children's services, social services? What are we talking about?
Okay, it's in relation to what we call the local government financial settlement. And the local government financial settlement has seven aspects based on 100 and something indicators, but they include seven blocks of expenditure for different services. And those blocks of expenditure, how much you're allowed for children's services, how much you're allowed for police, how much you're allowed for fire, are put into a single amount of money that local authorities receive. So there is a calculation on the children's services, there is one on adult services, and there are five others. I've mentioned police, but that they're one of the blocks, one of the most easiest. But the amount the local government, the amount the local authorities get is a single block. And they spend it whichever way they see fit. And that's, it basically is done that way because the Treasury in particular recognises that a bit of flexibility between the different blocks is a good thing if local authorities are trying to prioritise their expenditure as efficiently and as effectively as they can in their local
area. So this is the money that is coming from central government to local authorities. What proportion is that of their total income, say, compared to business rates and council tax?
Okay, it is getting to the stage where it is definitely decreasing as a portion, and it depends on every local authority. Every local authority is different, but it is definitely coming down in most, if not all, authorities. And in some authorities, it'll start to be overtaken by some of the other big blocks of of money they get in, including the council tax, which is on domestic property, and the non-domestic or business rates that come from commercial and manufacturing activity, although not all businesses. Business rates are very partial in their coverage, and business is only part of business is those that have premises can be rateable. There's lots of businesses that no longer have premises, and therefore business rates are just as unequal geographically, and a wealthy area can raise a lot more in business rates than a poor area, notably the City of London, which raises.
Yeah, I mean, there's areas where businesses are and areas where people live. I mean, it is a nonsense, isn't it, as well? Because you'll have areas which are consume a lot of space, like, for example, a warehouse or a factory that might be paying people very little. And then you might have two kids sitting in a basement writing code that is earning millions or billions. So the most effective way of taxing business is on the turnover of the business, which becomes not a local authority job, but a central government job. So, I mean, the logic would say it's crazy to tax businesses at the local level unless you have this strange idea that, well, it'll encourage businesses to develop. It'll encourage local councils to say, well, let's get more business in our area because we're going to raise more revenue. But, I mean, that's clearly not working. It makes sense, surely, that this is a central government. We already tax businesses based on their turnover or their profit. Just pass more of that out to local authorities.
Yeah, business rates have been recognised to be inadequate, unfair, and partial for decades.
Yeah, you know, to so be honest, do away with them. I mean, it's unfair for a retail store to be paying rates when they're competing against online. And then you get local councils saying, "Well, we've got to make money other ways." So they, you know, I think my local authority is trying to make money entirely out of parking fines and parking tickets. So that stops people going in and shopping at those places.
But what we're saying is
they're fighting against themselves.
The funding model itself is
broken.
Is very broken because, I mean, in proportion terms, I'm just getting a sense of this. In general, has the government grant or the government amount of money generally been over 50% of a council's income, or has it been generally less than that?
Oh, it's generally been over.
So the majority of money would be from central government.
But in general terms, yeah, the biggest amount that local authorities get is not income they generate themselves through council tax, is not generally business rates, it's not fees and charges, and it's not some of the other innovative things they're allowed to do. It has generally been central government grant. But that central government grant is going down and has been going down now for 14 years. And it is due to go down. If the government's autumn statement is to be believed, it will go down further in the next 5 years.
Because they want local authorities to take more responsibility for their spending? Is that the impetus?
No, they want to reduce the role of local authorities. They want to reduce the size of local authorities, the range of services it provides for its people, and the cost at which they have to get from taxpayers.
So not that they want to replace them with the central government looking after these things. They just want them to stop.
Nope. In fact, over that 15 years, at various times, if it looks as though local authorities are proportionately doing well, central government have shifted responsibility for more services onto local authorities. So in about 2014, they shifted public health, which was previously part of the NHS, into the responsibility of local authorities. And they transferred some money across from the NHS budget to the local authorities, but not as much as is required to keep the level of services as they were. So public health services, they froze the amount for a couple of years. And since that time, public health services, like other local authority services, have had less money to spend.
So is it politics? It's how much of this is politics then? You know, that we've got a Conservative government that wants to make areas wants to make small government look bad, but also you'd assume a lot of these areas are Labour-controlled councils. And actually, you know, broader question as well, is there a place for politics in all of this? I don't know what the political persuasion was of the local authority that you're working for, but I mean, it seems to me that, you know, a lot of this is administration. Do we need politics at the local level, or do we just need people that are going to provide those essential services? You know, and does it matter what the colour of the council is? We all want the same thing out of them.
Well, I must admit, when the previous regime was in, all political parties bought into it. So it didn't really matter which government it was, but all political parties at national and local level bought into the scheme, that the idea that what we ought to be doing is improving local authorities and improving public services from national, from the central government. So it wasn't as political as it is at the moment, but it is undoubtedly more politics, as with a big P, party political politics, has crept into this. But all I would say is there are only two times realistically you get the public gets a choice and goes to the ballot box, and that's what gives both central governments and local governments legitimacy.
Right, but we don't go to in all.
Well, not enough of us vote, do we?
We don't go to the local government ones, do we? Not many.
I would say you go to local government elections more than you go to by-elections for central government.
Yeah, true.
And certainly more than you go to, well, let's not get into it, but everywhere in the modern Western world, local authorities and central governments are subject to democratic control.
Yeah.
Okay? Is local government important enough to be subject to democratic control? Yes, it definitely is, in my opinion. And the best places are when local politicians take leadership of solving their local problems. And that's the issue here. Are the problems being caused locally? Well, generally not. You know, yes, some councils have gone off and done some things that people like me have said to the government, whatever you do, don't give them the power to do X and Y, such as invest in on the stock market or invest in developments overseas where they have no experience or knowledge of.
Well, you're talking Woking there. You're talking Woking, aren't you, there? You know, where they invested.
Woking is one of them. And I notice in the financial settlement, I live in Nottingham, you know, so it's right on my doorstep.
Which is another one that's gone bad, of course.
Yeah, it's another one. Well, Nottingham has received a capitalisation, an allocation for the capitalisation fund two weeks ago, on the special financial support of about 60 million over 2 years. Woking, with a population about a third and services less than a third, received a capitalization of 238 million.
So you're saying that's essentially a political decision?
No, because... I'm not saying it's a political thing, but Woking have got themselves in a mess by investing in things they don't know.
Exactly. No, I haven't got the expertise, which is the stuff raises the question, which I was trying to lead to when talking about the politics of all of this. We want, at the very local level, we want, you know, to be able to have schools provided.
Social
we want
services.
To have social services. We want to have a library. We want
roads not having holes
in them. Yeah. You know, we'd like a park where we can go and walk our dogs. We want it to be a pleasant place to live. And all of those things don't seem like political decisions. It's administration. And if you had a formula for allocating money to provide those based on the wealth of the area,
you're taking out the political elements. You're taking out the accountability elements.
And
as well.
You might then, on top of that, have let's also have additional funding that can be used for local expertise, which may become political as to what you do next. But but you'd think a lot of that is going to be planned. I mean, you need more regional plans than local plans. The problem with Woking thinking that it's going to be Singapore on the River Wey is that it's just not big enough. If there was a regional plan for outside London, then they may be part of that.
But Pete, is that the way forward then, to have something that's much less political, much more planned,
more regional planning rather than local planning?
Five years ago, we were front of the Select Committee, the Local Government Select Committee. There was myself, there was Tony Travers from the London School of Economics, there was Institute of Fiscal Studies, there was CIPFA, Chartered Institute of Public Finance Accountants, and we also had a contribution from the head of the National Audit Office. We were asked what we thought should happen in the long term. And what we all said, that in the really long term, what was going to need to happen was there was going to need to be a single regional pot of money that included all public services, not just local authorities, health, police, lot, and that there should be a mechanism at the local level for deciding where the priorities are.
So yeah. A regional pot and then local... And that region, that local so areas that region, deciding what
and
they
that
want.
Region would be a county council, or it would be bigger, it would be an amalgam of councils.
No, it would be bigger than that, otherwise you won't be able to cross subsidize and do things like that.
Yeah.
But we used to have standard economic regions, 9 standard regions in this country. And the
problem
old
with that is it sounds like bleeding common sense. That's why it's not happening. It just seems like the obvious way to plan regionally and then divest the money to locally based on need within that region. I mean, that's just common sense.
Yeah, it used to be argued that the Treasury used to argue that they couldn't technically do it. It would be too complicated for them. And that argument has been around for over 40 years. However, when we devolved responsibility to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, that effectively blew holes in that argument. If you can devolve to those areas, why can't you devolve to the 9 areas?
It's the same thing.
Do you think that is what will eventually... I mean, obviously in evidence you suggested that would happen, but did you get the sense from the politicians you were speaking to that it was something that they agreed should in the end be what happened?
Oh, yeah. We got the... And it's a mix. Select committees are mixed. All political parties are represented on it. And so I think at that time, Labour had the chair and... The Tories had the deputy chair, and I think there was quite a number from the Lib Dems on the.
So I'm getting the feeling. I don't know if you're getting this, Roger. I'm just getting the sense that there might be a change of government later this year or early next year.
It's feasible, isn't it?
Just the people in the know are suggesting this. If we had a Labour government, would they attack this area and see that sort of change coming through? Because it sounds like, you know, bad though it is now, those councils that haven't gone into administration, loads of them are saying, well, it's not us now, but it will be soon. Yeah. We are selling assets to survive and we're going to run out of those assets at some point. It's just a downward spiral.
But contrary-wise, Pete, I mean, an incoming Labour government is not going to want to spend more, which is in a way what this sounds like it would need to be.
Well, let me put it this way. I'm certain whichever of the governments come into power, I think they'll have to do something about this. What the current administration has been doing for the past 5 years is giving little pots of money as sticking plasters in certain areas, whether it's geographical areas or service areas. It's been doing that to try and head off the worst of this, but they're not going to be able to head off the worst of it. You've got to do something radical. And what I'm frightened of is that they carry on doing short-term fixes, whichever political party comes into power. The Select Committee asked the latest local government minister when they reported again about this issue for about the seventh time in the last 15 years. And they said, we've given you all these things that you should do about it. What have you done between 2019 and now? And he basically says, oh, you can't. Basic response was, this is such a fundamental issue that will raise so many objections that it's the sort of thing you've got to do. You've got to do at the start of a long administration. You can't do it halfway through, and you certainly can't do it towards the end of an administration. Now, what I'm worried about is that they don't start because they've got endless excuses for doing something else. And sorting local government out, even if they kept the same pot for local government and distributed it more efficiently, effectively and fairly, even if they did that, I would think it would be a great step forward.
But it's a long way down on their list. But I mean, but Pete, let me make one case that we haven't really been. We've been kind of in agreement on this. But you do hear people in central government and certainly in local Conservative associations say the problem is waste. The problem is misuse of the funds that these councils have. And there are endless examples of them funding all sorts of diversity projects. This is usually the bugbear, things like that, funding massive days to celebrate transgenderism. You know, you hear these things being said, and they say, well, this is the problem. It's local government trying to take on too much, but also wasting local people's money. That's what they need to be held accountable for, and that's why they get into this financial trouble. Is there any truth in any of that?
There's bound to be pockets of waste, I would say, in most services, in any service or in any geographical area. So the real thing is to get some idea of the scale of what we're talking about, of what you're talking about. Is cutting down on waste going to resolve financial problems of local government as a whole? Don't make me laugh. They've been saying that for God knows how long. And in certain times and in certain parts, we've got some indications of how much waste there is and how much improvement local authorities can make. But in terms of the level of waste, certainly in comparison to central government, you know, and certainly in comparison to central government over the last 15 years, the amount that is wasted, local authorities are far more effective, efficient, and economic than central government is. And in the few times we've got the figures to calculate them against each other, local authorities have been far in advance of central government and far in advance of central government agencies in both innovation and in efficiency and effectiveness.
I can't imagine the central government collecting our bins. That would just be a disaster, wouldn't it? You know, we know that things are operating well at the local level. So
we don't. In some areas, it's not working well.
Not working well, but I mean, it's, you know, at least it happens, you know, most of the time. So we're getting close to the end now. But it sounds like more regionalisation, and the politics in that case for the planning would be at the regional level rather than a more administrative approach at the local level. So you take most of the politics out of the local level, they just become administrative functions for that regional government. And there's another aspect which we haven't talked about. We probably haven't got much time to talk about it now. But I mean, at some point, I think we're going to realise that the tax system generally is broken, and there needs to be more of an acceptance that we need to tax wealth more than income. And then you start to look at models like, for example, land tax. As again, you know, maybe reducing income tax and charging more for land tax. And then you start to raise the question, well, if you start looking at local land tax, who's best placed to collect that? And maybe it is more the local level rather than the central government level. And then you can start to say, well, okay, if we've got a lot of wealthy people, or we want to have more wealthy people, we need to improve the value of the land. How do you improve the value of the land in the region? You provide better facilities and services. So then that incentive for local authorities or these regional planning areas to improve the lot of local people so that the land tax, they gather more in land tax. It's got to be some sort of model like that. But that's a sweeping change because it's how central government and local government is funded. But, I mean, we need to look at all of that holistically, don't we?
No government wants to open up the whole area of local taxation again, I think. Is that, I mean, we know the history of that with poll tax, of course, local, you know, government charge, the rate system before that. I mean, this is not an easy area for anyone to operate in.
No. The one thing I would say is we got rid of the government offices for the regions in 2011. And they operated fairly effectively as communications between central government and local government. And what we did away with was a mechanism for resolving things at a geographical scale greater than local authorities. And what you're seeing at the moment for partial and ad hoc, you're seeing combined authorities being created, and you're seeing Devo deals being made when realistically you've got a regional scale problem and it's got so large that you've got to attempt to deal with it on a greater geographical scale. And that is just a whole host of inefficiencies that are being baked.
We've got a whole lot of heads of local areas all negotiating over decisions that would be made by one person if it was one region or one government anyway.
Yeah.
But you'd want a representative body,
for sure,
at the regional level.
About regional parliaments, which is a bit like
how London is structured,
talked about before. Yeah. This is a huge area, Peter. Thanks so much for talking to us about it. Clearly, there are ideas there to think about, but it sounds to me like something that isn't even easily going to be sorted out anytime soon.
But it's good, but it's, you're not sounding at all optimistic. But where we're heading, we might get another term of government where, you know, again, the problem is just being kicked down the road. The can is being kicked further, and we see more local services suffering.
Yeah.
But you're
whichever party is in power, and be that you're independent.
I have been for a long time in party a politically restricted posts. I am not a member of any political parties. I have never given money to any political parties. But there used to be a way that we used to do these sort of complicated problems in this country. And that was we usually give the problem to an independent commission, for instance, a local government commission or a parliamentary commission or a royal commission. And they come up with the solution. And then basically the party political players nibble at the edges of that solution. And usually those solutions endure for 20 or 30 years. And basically when we devolve stuff to Scotland, that they looked at it and thought, what we'll do is have an independent commission, the Christie Commission, that looks at all these boundary issues and public services within Scotland. And they will come up with and ask them to come up with appropriate mechanisms and places to do these things. And then when they reported, they essentially implemented the equivalent of a royal commission, because Scotland could only have it as a devolved commission. So they had the Christie Commission in Scotland, and they gave it to a load of independent experts, and they knocked it about for not very long, to be honest, and came up with a solution that the parties had to authorize. They did amend some things around the edges, but they generally put it into place.
Right. So we're doing the same thing. I mean, we've had a fair funding review, haven't we? I'm not quite sure how much of that's been adopted, but
we need something more fundamental like that kind of commission to sort out this problem.
Yeah, it would be a greater. It would embrace what was in the fair funding review and some other. You know, we haven't got a fit for purpose local audit system. Hasn't been fit for purpose for some time, and is certainly not fit for future purpose. So you would want all of those local government financial, about four mechanisms that I mentioned before, and you would want the remit to be those four mechanisms, and you would want them to come up with a solution that would fit every part of the country.
No, and we'd want that to happen in the next term of
government,
wouldn't we?
See if it does, I think. Mm. But Pete, thank you so much for talking to us and for giving us all that information, which is an incredibly complicated subject, but one that clearly does need addressing just by looking at the kind of crisis we're now in. But thank you for being with us.
Yep. No, thank you.
I tell you what, thank goodness local councils aren't responsible for prisons, or are they?
Well, no.
That
not,
is
no.
A that's central a, government
that's
thing.
A central government thing. But yes, I mean, they would make a fine bish of it, I suppose.
Yeah, but then the central government's made quite a mess of it as well.
To put it mildly, we have so many prisoners. Mm. We have the highest percentage of the population in prison in Europe.
Right.
Which is
still
something.
A long way behind
the
United
way behind
States.
America, yeah. But even so. And the reoffending rate's pretty high. The prisons themselves are, well, in many cases, very badly run.
Mm.
And the capacity, because of the funding, means that the capacity for any actual work that might perhaps prepare them for work outside or
it's not happening.
In any way addresses the offending. Well, it does happen, but it's not nearly as good as
And
it
a lot
be.
Of them are very old buildings as well, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
It's not been enough investment, but I guess it's a very hard case to say, well, we're going to invest to make life a bit more comfortable for people in prison. A lot of people would say,
yes, they have a cosy time of it in there.
Exactly.
It's
a holiday camp.
It's a holiday camp, yes. And although, it costs so much.
Actually, that would be the answer, wouldn't it? Stick them in a holiday camp, you've been sentenced for 4 years in Butlins.
Well, as they often
that
say,
get with the crime rate down.
With a young offenders institution, it actually costs more to keep them in it than it would to send them to Harrow or Eton or whatever. It's extraordinary the amount of money you need for these kind of things. I mean, that's an unfair comparison, but it indicates that we are spending an awful lot of money on something.
Mm. Do you think they would be less likely to follow a life of crime if they went to Harrow?
No, they'd just get away with it better.
Yeah, they just know how to cover their tracks.
Anyway, no, but it's a serious thing, and it needs to be talked about and addressed because it's...
The fundamental question is, what is the business case for all of this? You know, is it working?
Is there a business case?
Why do we send people to prison? What do we expect to get out of it? How much does it cost?
Is it effective? Is it a deterrent? Marginally. Is it going to change them when they come out? Are they going to become, you know, sober citizens as a result? Very unlikely. Does it actually just take them off the streets for a bit? Probably. Yeah. And that's about it.
And are we sending too many? Are we sending the wrong people to prison
pretty
as well?
Clearly, yes, because judges are now under huge pressure not to send people to prison. Yeah.
Well, it's become politicised, hasn't it? We've almost talked for half an hour about what's going to happen next week, so let's get off and do that next week. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening in. This is The Y Curve. Me and Roger back again next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
The Y Curve.